Recently, Dr. Richard Land, President Emeritus of Southern Evangelical Seminary, wrote an op-ed for the Christian Post, a major Christian website for which Dr. Land serves as an executive editor, or the executive editor. The article was asking if the spirit of 1776 is imperiled in our day. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Richard Land. Dr. Land, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
Sure. Before we get into the subject at hand, tell us, what is the spirit of 1776?
Well, I think a good example of it is what's happening in Ukraine right now. The Ukrainians are evidencing the spirit of 1776. People take they're taking their families to the border, and then the men are turning around and coming back to fight. The spirit of Lexington and Concord, that, you know, when our ancestors took on the British, they took on the world's first superpower, and they were just a bunch of farmers and shopkeepers along the Atlantic coast, but they stood up for freedom and they fought for their independence.
And they won by God's grace. You know, isn't it interesting? In those days, they had the shot heard around the world, and today we have the slap heard around the world.
Well, the shot heard around the world had a little more consequence, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Okay, so why would the spirit of 1776 be imperiled in our day? What are you actually talking about?
Well, there was a poll done just recently after the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the fact that we're all inspired by the Ukrainians' response. And people were asked, if America faced a situation like Ukraine, where our country is being invaded, would you stay and fight, or would you leave? And the results, frankly, were shocking. They found that broken down by party, 68% of Republicans said yes, which I think is awfully low. Among independents, 57% said they would stay. And among Democrats, only 40% said they would stay.
Wow.
Which is really shocking, and is even more shocking when you look at the age breakdown. Among those 18 to 34, 45% said they would stay and fight, and 48% said they would leave the country.
Wow.
Among 35 to 49-year-olds, 57% said they would stay and fight, 37% said they would leave the country. And among those 50 to 64, 66% said they would stay and fight, and only 28% said they would leave the country. So the younger you are, the less likely you're willing to stay and fight for America.
Well, this is because they've been told over and over that America is bad, and America was bad, America was always bad, and I guess maybe it always will be bad, you know, unless the left completely takes over, and then supposedly they'll usher in the millennium, a secular millennium.
Well, what they will usher in is the disintegration of the United States.
Sure.
It'll dissolve into a series of ethnic tribes if they get their wish. But I think that the answer to why it's dropped is because people haven't been taught in the younger generations about what an exceptional country this is.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan talked about that in 1988, his farewell address. He said, those of us who are over 35 or so years of age, born before 1954, grew up in a different America. We were taught very directly what it means to be an American. We absorbed almost in the air a love of country and an appreciation of its institutions. And then he said, younger parents aren't sure that an unambivalent appreciation of America is the right thing to teach modern children. And now we're seeing the fruits of that indecision and the fruits of people attacking the United States. The United States is not perfect, but it's the greatest country ever conceived by the mind of man. And the luckiest thing that can happen to anyone is to be born in the United States.
Boy, it's so true, though, that you just have all this anti-American message over and over and over. And there's no question that there were, you know, there was the original sin of slavery and there was the mistreatment of the Indians. Those are the two major sins of America. And then after even slavery was uprooted, then blacks had to deal with the Jim Crow laws and so forth. But the founders built in, within the framework itself, in our founding documents, they built in the opportunity to change things through we the people, through the legislative process under God. And I think that the key is that the foundation is there and the foundation is good, despite all the attempts to destroy the foundation and destroy the whole nation.
The classic example in your lifetime and mine is Dr. King. Dr. King called on America to live up to the promises of its founding documents. And America has made a noble effort to do so through the Civil Rights Revolution. And critical race theory is the exact opposite of Dr. King. Critical race theory says is that everyone should be judged by the color of their skin rather than by the content of their character.
Yeah, well, and I think what's going to happen is as more and more of the public schools have that kind of teaching, critical race theory and so forth, that will even imperil the spirit of 1776 in America going forward, that much more.
Well, there's no question about that. You know, students, when they're mature, become like their teachers. And that's why more and more Americans are opting out of brainwashing public schools. Plus, you know, the COVID epidemic has brought one good thing, and that is that American parents have become much more aware of what their children are being taught in school, and they don't like it, and they're revolting against it. And there's a genuine parents movement, a grassroots parents revolution going on, and I am hopeful and praying that it'll be victorious.
I agree with you. Let me ask you a question. You and I have talked on many different occasions about the rise of socialism in our time among Americans, especially the young. Is it possible? This is just a speculative thought on my part, but genuinely, Putin is a communist. I mean, he's the bitter fruit of socialism, of communism, because he's basically trying to, you know, resurrect, if you will, the old Soviet Union, which was all based on socialism. Is it possible that some, you know, idealized, starry-eyed young people in America might see with the face of Putin, oh, this is what socialism leads to. We don't want to have anything to do with it. Is that possible?
I doubt that. Doubt that. For one thing,
well,
I don't
bummer.
Think that Putin is a communist. He has rejected communism in several of his speeches. He said, you know, we tried that, it didn't work. He is a Russian nationalist, and he wants to, his vision for Russia is to go back to Imperial Russia.
So he's a czarist.
The news are.
I see.
And you can't really understand him without understanding that he sees the Ukrainians as a breakaway province from Russia.
Right.
He wants to restore Mother Russia.
Okay, so Putin is the face of the czar, in effect. Okay. You, in your column about how the spirit of 1776 may be imperiled in our day, you quote C.S. Lewis, where he says, in a sort of
yes.
ghastly simplicity, we remove the organ and we demand the function. Go ahead and give us this quote if you have it, or I'll quote it if you wish.
Yeah,
I've got it right in my...
I do. No,
okay.
It's...
yeah, go ahead.
Lewis, you know, was amazingly prescient. In 1943, he was sent an English grammar textbook that was going to be used in the English schools because, you know, he was a professor of English at Oxford. And after he read the book, he wrote a book called The Abolition of Man, because this book was completely filled with relativism. And he said that the denial of the concept of absolute truth would lead to the decay of moral virtue in society. And here's his quote. In a sort of ghastly simplicity, we remove the organ and demand the function. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful.
Okay, and so in other words, We're basically making people to hate America. We're getting Americans, young Americans, skulls full of mush, as Rush Limbaugh would put it, to hate America. And now we're surprised that, oh, look, there's a lot of young Americans that hate America.
Right. And we tell them that truth is relative, that there's your truth and my truth, and there's not an objective truth. And so they become their own, they have their own idiosyncratic dictionaries. And we end up wondering why they don't want to fight for America.
Okay, now where does Christianity fit in all of this discussion?
Well, Christianity certainly believes in absolutes. We believe in moral absolutes. Some things are always wrong. Some things are always right. And the Bible defines what they are. And that's, you understand that, that one reason for the increasing hostility against Christianity is when you have a society that's engulfed by moral relativism, the only thing they can't stand are people who believe in absolutes, namely Orthodox Christians.
That's a very good point. So how do we resurrect patriotism in America? Or am I even asking the right question?
Well, I think that that what we need to pray for and work for and importune God for is a revival that ripens into an awakening and becomes a reformation. And it'll happen in that order. We're not going to cure what ails us in Washington or in our state capitals. Government is a caboose, not a locomotive. Government follows where the people go. We need to have a revival. A revival is when God's people get right with God. You have to revive before you can be revived. And then when that happens, lost people notice the difference in us. And then we get to tell them about Jesus. And if enough of them become believers, then we have an awakening. And then if the revived Christians and the newly born again Christians apply the truth of the scripture to the society, then we can have a reformation that will shake America as profoundly as Luther shook Germany and Whitfield and Wesley shook England for Jesus. And that's what we have to have. We're too far gone for anything else. Our problems are God-sized problems, and only God can solve them.
Well, you know, Whitfield also was influential. George Whitfield, the preacher, was perhaps as much influential in America as he was in England, because,
oh, yes.
I mean, Ben Franklin, who was not a very, you know, godly man, you know, by his own admission, his views were unorthodox, but he was more Christian oriented than people give him credit for. But anyway, he said that when Whitfield would go to a town, he said you could walk down the town and in the different households, you could hear psalms being sung in different households and so forth. I mean, the impact of Whitfield's preaching was amazing, and the crime went down, et cetera, as you would expect.
Well, there's no question about that. The American Revolution would not have happened, and it would not have been successful had it not been preceded by the Great Awakening.
Yes.
Just to give you one example, in 1740, the least religious part of the country was the South. The least religious part. And by the time the Great Awakening was over with in 1770, it had become the most religious part and has remained so until today.
Okay, then one could ask, and I don't want to spend too long on this, but what about slavery then?
Well, slavery was a terrible problem, and you know, our founders knew it. They knew it. They just understood that they couldn't have a country if they tried to abolish slavery in 1789, that the South would not have joined the Union. The South joined the Union, but built into the Constitution and built into the Declaration of Independence is a death stab at slavery. It eventually had to end, and it did.
Yes.
The South, there was a lot of anti-slavery movement in the South as well as in the North. In fact, the American Colonization Society, which was a society committed to freeing the slaves and resettling them either in the West or back in Africa, had as many Southerners involved in it as it did Northerners.
Wow. Okay, well, we have...
Go ahead. When there's seven of the 11 Confederate states voted on whether to... secede from the Union. I mean, they had an actual election. And do you know that the highest percentage of white males, who are the only ones who could vote, the highest percentage of white males who voted for secession was in Texas, and it was 60%. So 40% of the white males in Texas voted not to secede. And it was higher in the other states.
All right, well, we're out of time, but I will refer people to ChristianPost.com, and we'll link to your article. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Land.
Well, thank you, brother.
Okay.
And let's all pray for revival.
Amen.